Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad. Which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it? Crunchy wontons? Asian slaw? Citrus vinaigrette? Teriyaki glaze? Sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Sensation Salad. Only at Zaxby's.
A member of the DATC media family.
Hey, it's JD here, and I want to welcome you all to the Road to the Top 40 review and the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown preview. That's right, this is a two-fold fucking episode. Ah, but there's actually a third fold. Our panelists. Today on the roundtable, I'm joined by Dean Rainey, Kirk Lane, and Sarah J. How is it going, Dean?
Good, JD. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for asking. It's a little bleak outside, but went for a walk already today. Got a coffee. It's good things. Kirk, what's up with you, buddy?
Hey, man. Sun's coming up out here in beautiful, sunny California. It is in the 40s. That is Fahrenheit. But yeah, had some internet issues. But other than that, glad to be with y'all.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. And let's welcome our new friend, Sarah J. How are you doing on this hip-tastic day?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really excited. It's my first time meeting Kirk and Dean too. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for having me so much.
Yeah, no, it is going to be fun. These roundtable episodes for my other podcasts tend to be very popular. So I'm anticipating the same for this. So here's the deal. Today, we're going to spend some time with the complete list of 169. We'll get some hot takes and feedback about that list. And then from there, we'll look forward to Monday, January 6th and get some predictions and discussions surrounding the top 40 countdown. But before we crack that nut, let's learn a little bit more about our panelists and their bona fides as Tragically Hip fans. Mr. Lane, how long have you been a fan of the hip and what is your current? And I'll say current because this changes all the time. What is your current go-to record?
Yeah, well, my hipstery started late 90s when I was introduced to them. I am a musician and at the time was in a band. We had just put out an album and, you know, we were playing around locally here in the SoCal area, but I was very into the music scene. And in my line of work, I'd had a few Canadian friends. And, you know, you start having a music discussion and they introduced the Tragically Hip and I'd never heard of them before, but thought probably the coolest name I've ever heard of for a band. So, you know, back then you don't just pick up your phone and start listening. Like you gotta get the CDs. And, fortunately at the time, I had spent a little bit of time up in Canada working up there. And so got a pretty heavy dosage, which I think really, you know, solidified my love. And then luckily got to see him quite a bit down here in Southern California and also up at Fillmore West in San Francisco, which was a magical show. And you know, unfortunately, I guess for the band, but maybe not after watching the docuseries, but fortunately for me, they played small clubs down here. So, you know, I would see them in LA, Hollywood, Anaheim, and, you know, be sitting next to the NHL players from the Ducks or the Kings and, you know, Canadian TV and movie stars and stuff. And, you're just having a conversation with the hip and watching this crazy band. And so, you know, I went on that ride for 7-10 years. And then the last couple albums was like, okay, I'd put a lot of time and effort in and kind of moved away at that point. But always loved them. And then obviously fell back in love with them with some of the podcasts that you put out, JD. So, and was lucky enough to be part of your Discovering Downey series, which was a lot of fun. And just helped me fall in love with the band. We talked about it on a couple episodes. It felt like every month you'd do a deep dive back into it while you're listening to the Gord Downie solo stuff, and just loved it. And so my go-to album, I think, always is Music at Work, because that's when I really, came in touch with the band.
That is so wild for me to hear that, because that's as I was slipping away, right? So it's really fascinating to think that, I wasn't necessarily dropping the baton, but I was passing it along in theory. There were lots of other fans that got into it at the time, and we're going to learn from those fans in the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown, because every episode I sit with a fan and we talk about their history. So that's pretty interesting stuff. Sarah J, what about your hip journey and your current go-to record?
Well, I'm going to try to keep it in a short answer, because I'm still working on the episode that you and I are going to be recording on Saturday, so I don't want to spill too much. But for me, I was thinking about it. It was like 2006, 2007, and I like to say I'm geographically blessed. I lived in Buffalo since 1998, but my mom was born and raised here. So even though I was born and raised in North Carolina, we always came to visit Buffalo, and there were always those really deep roots here. So that's what I like to always say is, being from Buffalo really, really helped all of that happen for me. So that's a whole deep dive and a long rabbit hole that we could fall down, the relationship and the never ending, intertwining of the hip and Buffalo, New York. It's really, really cool to find out more. As I've fallen back in love with the band, that's what happened with me. I've had kids and life and things and, kind of taken a different trajectory. And with everything that's, recently come out and, thanks to the internet and everything else, it's been a really wonderful rekindling thing to happen, and perfectly timed with my personal life as well. It's just really, really awesome. And, meeting JD and all the things that we've talked about and everything, it's just been a really cool experience. So I guess that's my short answer. And my always go-to album is In Violet Light. And I love what somebody said in the docuseries about how they were like, it's a phenomenal fucking album. And I'm like, absolutely, 100%. Like, I don't remember who said it, but like, I actually finished the sentence like before he finished saying it and said the same thing. I was like, it's just a phenomenal fucking album. And I love that album so much. And I feel like it's such a Johnny album. Just my favorite.
I think it was Billy Ray, right? That said it.
I think it was.
Pretty sure it was Billy Ray that said it.
Phenomenal fucking album. It really, really is. So
it totally is. And there's a fun little Easter egg on the interview that we did with Johnny Fay, where we're encouraging him to reissue full of Music at Work. And he sort of cringes and he's like, no, I don't want to do that. But I'll tell you what I have been listening to. I've been listening to In Violet Light, and
see,
that is a great
it's
record.
A Johnny album. That, yeah.
So my hunch is that's the next one we see reissue.
Such a good hunch. Album. It's my favorite.
Mr. Dean Rainey, how about you? What is your history and your relationship with the band and your current go-to record?
So I first heard about the hip, I got to think 1990, maybe 91. A certain friend of mine named JD kept going on and on about this band that I had to hear, and I didn't pay much attention to it. And then I remember we were at a festival, Pumpkin Fest or something like that, and New Orleans is Thinking came on, and you're like, that's that band that I was telling you about. And I was like, okay, well, this is all right, because I was 15 at the time, 16, It was like very bluesy. I was like, I don't know if I'm really into this. But then just as we were going to house parties and bush parties and festivals and all that, like small town festivals where we are, heard a lot of Up to Here. And then just boom. Yeah. Just got sucked right in there with you. And I think we went hardcore on them there.
Oh, yeah.
And then Road Apples came out. And that just blew my mind because for me, I just always took to it. I have a video production company. I'm a filmmaker. And that album is just so cinematic to me. Like it just, the lyrics are just, there's great storytelling. They just feel like mini movies. And so I was just drawn to that and I was inspired and we'd write short films and we'd come up with scenes to go with them. And so I was hardcore hip fan up until Day for Night. And Day for Night came out. I was living in the US going to film school down there and was looking for anything Canadiana. And I remember I was waiting on you for months and months and months to ship me that CD down there. And when it came, I just listened to it nonstop. That was the year they were on the Saturday Night Live. And then when I came back to Canada, Trouble at the Hen House, Phantom Power, good albums. But then I started to sort of lose interest again around music at work. Or not lose interest, but just like getting on to other things and other music and that. And then I moved to Asia, but I always sort of would keep tabs a little bit. What's going on? A few singles here and there and a few, you know, from In Violent Light and World Container and that. But I wasn't hardcore into the band the later years, just sort of on the peripheral there. And then obviously, you know, meeting Kurt, talking with other people about these other, the later albums, like, oh, I got to get back into those. For me, my top album go-to, I don't know, when I think of a go-to album, I'm thinking like, it's very rare that I put on a full album anymore. So I'm like, am I doing some work around the house? Okay, what do I want to do drywalling to or something like that? So for me, it's any of those first four full-length albums, Up to Here, Road Apples, Fully Completely, Day for Night.
Can't go wrong.
End to end.
You can't not go wrong with any of those records. No, absolutely. So let's get to the list. There's been a lot of grumbling in the later stages of the list. And as we've gotten to the earlier stages in the 50s and 40s, it seems to me that we're getting the real big surprises. Like, oh, this didn't get enough points to, you know, crack the actual top 40. That's interesting to me. When I first reached out to people and asked for their top 20 ballots, I had no idea that I would A, get as many votes submitted as I did. And B, I did not have a clue that there would be as many songs receiving votes as they did. 169 songs received votes. I don't know how big the catalog is, but I don't think it's over 200. And if it is 200, that means 85% of their songs received a vote. That's a testament to this band, wouldn't you say, Kirk?
Absolutely. To me, that has been my biggest, I guess, because we've had some up and down emotions talking about the relationship with the band. And even as Dean mentioned, like there's that kind of first part and there's this big core group of people. And then I came in kind of that late 90s, early 2000s. And then then I even had my drop off period, the last three albums. Right. And then this list starts coming out and you start dropping these five songs at every couple of days. And I'm just like, I got songs that are in my top 20 that are in like 150. And then, you know, at first you get that territorial, like you guys are, well, no, they're not wrong. Like that's the beauty of this band. And then hot take, 200 plus recorded songs. And that doesn't even scratch the surface of the live recordings. And if you ever saw the band live, it's like, I mean, I'm a big Grateful Dead fan, right? Their albums weren't great. Some of them were, but their albums weren't great. They were about their live presence. I mean, 2,000, 2,500 gigs, and they never played the same set list twice. And the Hips, very similar, a new set list every night. And it was such a testament to me after I went through all the emotions. And I went through emotions, and I'm going to go through emotions today too, because you fall in love with these songs. Like some of these songs were when my child was born, and I tie it to that. So the song becomes emotionally connected, right? So to me, the variety, it caused me angst, but then in the same breath, it caused me like, maybe they didn't get that exposure down here in the States that they should have. And the docuseries, I think, really covered that pretty well. I still wanted it to happen because I did want him to be living here in Southern California and in Malibu and in Beverly Hills. And I want him to be, you know, big time stars because their music deserved it. And this, to me, this whole project, JD, is a testament to that, that you're going to get a song from all 13 plus recorded, you know, albums, that you're going to get them from all through the catalog at various points here. So just, every time you think there's, how could I love this band anymore kind of feeling, you know, after having a 25 year relationship with them, and here I am falling in love with them a different way. And now going and spending time with the catalogs that I didn't necessarily spend time with when I could have, you know, and there's a bit of regret in that regard, but in the same breath, I had a great run with my, you know, with the time with the band. So yeah, my hot take and just absolute love is the variety.
Excellent. All right. Yeah. I mean, the variety is the spice of life. So, you know, it's important to keep that music well seasoned.
So, that's how I feel about it. It's surprising. I will admit, I just looked at it yesterday because I submitted my 20 to you yesterday, right? Monday.
Yeah.
Monday it was. Yeah. I had to work on a top 20. So I just sent that to JD on Monday. And so I didn't want to look at this list until I had finished mine. I didn't want to feel any kind of emotion, you know, kind of along with what Kirk was saying. I didn't want to get any kind of emotional feels or whatever just by reading the list. So I was like, I'm not looking at it until I finish my top 20. And then as soon as I submitted it, I went and looked, and my number one song ranked at 118. So I understand completely.
Wow.
Talking about half of my top 20 is in this 41 to 169. So I'm like, okay, that's interesting. I don't know what that says about me, first of all. And it's just, it's interesting. I want to marinate on that some more. And it's interesting what the fans and the community feels, like you said, the relationship to the songs. And
yeah,
it's interesting. It's very interesting.
Yeah, agreed. Dean, you can be pretty spicy at times. What is your hot take?
Well, I don't know what to do with this list. It's ridiculous because I think you could give me any list in any order and I would pretty much sign off on it. But yeah, you got a point. I think so. Except that I'm a Werewolf Baby just ranked pretty high for me.
Yes.
And I'm just really shocked by that there is not a collective thought on that song, that somebody out there thinks that's a kicker. So yeah, but it's something I just can't believe. I don't know how many bands could you do this where there is just quantity and quality together. Like, I just can't believe it's song after song. I'm like, it's really hard. It's futile to even try to rank them, I think. But I understand the exercise because we got to have something.
Content is king, my friend.
Coconut Cream didn't even make the list.
That's interesting.
That was an interesting one for me because I thought, ooh, Butts Wiglin is here. But I understand Butts Wiglin's on a soundtrack, so it's got some, you know, credibility, I guess, there. But I just thought, whoa, Coconut Cream's didn't even on there. And there's other songs that I would just swap out.
I don't have a Head by a Century in my top 20. Like, and I really love that song on a bunch of different levels. And then I went through and I looked at my top 20 and I went, no, it shouldn't be in the top 20 for me. It's a brilliant friggin' song. It's brilliant. And of course, there's a reason why they played it that, you know, as their last song, but it didn't make my top 20. And so, but then I look at everything else that's in there and I'm like, no, that everything else that's in there deserves to be in there. It may fluctuate in as far as like, you know, what is really my number one at certain times, but you know, my go-to albums, music, work. So my songs, music at work. That's that memory for me of hearing that song, you know, first time live and just being blown away by it. But I mean, the positive thing that we've scratched the surface, JD, like there's quite a number of songs that are in my top 20 that are past 100 and beyond, and that you could get, you know, a band that has that type of variety. To me, I love it, because to me, I've always wanted that because of this list, because of my top 20, because of the top 40 that we're going to be able to see going through, you know, all of next year. But this list here, again, 200 songs, 169 represented here, you know, in the list that we're looking at, and almost every single album is touched along the way. And there are songs that people are just tearing their hair out going, are you kidding me? You know, that's 110, that's 118.
I know.
Like I've been looking for a couple of mine in the other list, and I'm like, I guess part of me is like, okay, I've got a good mix of those first four or five albums. Obviously, mine's represented a lot by that time that I spent with them. Sure. But now I'm excited too. Like I said, like now I get to go through those last three albums. And even though I listen to them, I don't have the relationship with them like I do the others. Well, now I have a great reason to. And especially with some of the cool connections that we got with discovering Downey, JD, and talking to some of the people that created, you know, some of that music. And so now I feel like I have this insider's perspective to it that's going to draw that connection even further as a musician, as a hip fan, as a Gourd fan, and now obviously being a part of this project and just, yeah, I'm excited about the 40, but I also think I'm going to need to, you know, do a pre-therapy session, for it, because there's going to be some like, whoa.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
For me, well, I do want to say it was interesting working on my top 20 list, because I had made a playlist for my Patreon subscribers and my community of music fans. And it was interesting to go back and look at that playlist that I made for them and how different it was from my top 20. And it was, you know, approaching the assignment differently. You know, when I'm giving this music to other people to digest, I want them to, you know, I have an idea of what they're going to want and what they're going to listen to and what they're going to like. But then when you ask me what my top 20 is, I'm going to dig a little deeper and get into the music that I really, really like from the catalog. So, you know, and pick my songs to do my top 20. So it took a little bit of time for me to come up with it. I don't know. My biggest surprise, I think, is just what's to come in the top 40. I feel like there's a lot of the catalog I feel like would have been higher ranked for sure. There's definitely a lot. And I don't know. I would love for JD to elaborate on what he said when I sent him this list. I can't remember exactly what you said. Surprising and varied. Is that the other word that you used?
It is the other word I used. Okay. Surprising and varied. Well, right off the bat, you've got All Tore Up as your number one, which, like you said, I think it was 114 on the list.
118, I think it is. It's 118.
And then you follow that up with It Can't Be Nashville Every Night, which is also has also appeared on the complete list.
And those are two songs, you know, it's funny. I sent you that list and then I've listened to them multiple times since then. And I had the same reaction like Kurt did. I'm like, these songs are fucking phenomenal. Like, absolutely, yeah. They belong in one and two. Like, yes, I stand by my decision. Yes.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, I just think you've got a lot of records represented here. You've got a couple. You've got like a B-side with Radio Show You're Not the Ocean.
You know what? That one snuck in last because I've, just like Kirk said again, like I've been going through the older or the newer, yeah, the newer albums. And I actually forgot about that song. And I had all these memories coming back from Canada Day in Sarnia and all these different things and hearing that on the radio and just like, oh my God, I fucking forgot about this song. And it was just like this whole moment that I had. And I'm like, I have one spot left and this needs to go on that list. And it was like this whole moment that I had. Just they're just each so phenomenal. And then collectively coming together and writing this music. And there's points in some of those songs where I'm like, oh my God, like this, like the bass is just so good. Like this song has to go on there because of that. And it's just like, it's just really special to go through and write that list. So
I'm surprised. A great list, very like great range. I'm just surprised not one out and not one song from Up to Here. And if you think about artists, they have their whole lifetime to write that first album. That's their best album. It's the sophomore one. This band's different. They just get better and better and better. But I'm surprised. There's nothing from that first album, eh?
I thought about that too. Like when I sent the list and then I went back through the list again and I actually even thought that to myself. I was like, wow. Okay. And I was like, damn. I was like, what can we rework here? And I was like, no, it's okay. It's all right. So it's funny that you mentioned that because I thought about that too. Yeah.
Well, Dean, let's take a look at your list and get a feel for it.
Which is like my list on a Wednesday. I don't know. I'd probably give you a different list on a Thursday. It's crazy.
Of course.
Love it.
It's not easy.
I think you could look at my list and you could go, okay, he was a fan for this period. You know?
Yeah.
You're Not the Ocean, though. And Music at Work. So you
yeah,
are.
Yeah, no. Yep. I'll tell you, World Container, You're Not the Ocean. Yeah, that single. Yeah, I was in Hong Kong when I think I came across that one or Jamie sent it to me or something. There wasn't all this streaming and everything. I had a little iPod and I played that MP3 and I just rode the bus and subway with that song. I said, that is a killer song. And I probably should have dove more into the album, but I just didn't get around to it.
So before we move on, I'm going to put myself on the hot seat. And I'm going to share with you my top 20 list and see if you have any thoughts or feelings on that list. I'll pull that up for you right now. That is my list for you, these top 20.
Wow. Unique, diverse, No Grace 2.
No Grace 2.
Wow.
Yeah.
I
love the song, but there's songs that I love more, you know?
Yeah, I'm surprised. And I didn't think there'd be so many other songs that would rank in the 20.
I love seeing Tiger the Lion and World Container. Obviously, those are ones that are, you know, near and dear to my heart. I love your top pick. It's a Good Life If You Don't Weekend. I mean, we just did a recent post about how when they were rehearsing at the bathhouse when they did that for the Juno awards with Feist, which was just, wow.
Gorgeous.
This is a great list. Dark Canuck.
Yeah, I should switch that out. I wrote the Dark Canuck, but I meant the Dire Wolf.
Which is still not in the top.
Both very different songs.
They're still not in the top 40, both of them. 49 for Dark Canuck and 42 for the Dire Wolf. That one blew me away because Justin from Discovering Downey mentioned that in Violet Light, like those three songs that are together, I believe it's, is it Beautiful Thing, Dire Wolf and Dark Canuck? It's just a brilliant combination of songs. You know, we talked about the track listing and those are just crazy. So it's good to see that, you know, even if that wasn't necessarily the song you meant to put down, JD, like they're close and both are in my top 20. So
it's funny sharing this. You feel like I can say this now. I had no problem sharing your list, but sharing mine, I feel so naked right now.
I mean, this is a great representation. I mean, as I've gotten to know you over the year, JD, and to know your relationship and knowledge of the catalog. Like, I'm happy. I'll say that. Like, oh, this is great. Like, this isn't a quote unquote greatest hits. Like, it's, you could tell you're a fan. I'll say that. You can tell you're a fan.
Yeah, it's true to how I've known JD a long time, and it's true to how I see him, you know, get into music.
In that list.
It is not all just hit singles.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, cool to think, though, of, you know, however many people turned in a list, like, everyone's going to be representative of their relationship. And I think the list that we have been talking about, you know, the 169 through 41 and the variety that I keep talking about, I think we'll see it in the top 40. I mean, I think it'll be heavy from the first 3 to 4 albums, but we should get some representation from some of the other stuff in there too.
But shall we shift gears here a little bit and move into the top 40, unless there's anything else, final thoughts on 169 through 40.
I thought it was interesting that all three of our lists, Grace 2 was in like the top 3 of all three of our lists.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
Yeah. And I think we're going to find that in the top 40. Like, I'll be really, really surprised if Grace 2 is not in the top 3. Surprised.
Yeah. Yep.
It's a concert surprised. Opener, right? Yep. It's probably their number one opener.
Yep.
Saturday Night Live, the Live Between Us, and then anyone who's ever heard it live will never forget the feeling inside of them when they hear the kick start and then the bass chord rolls in with that bass line.
Yep.
And you could be done and walk away at that point. Literally hear the drum intro and the bass line, and that fills you to the point of, I'm good. One of the best bands ever.
What I love about them is they are a rock and roll band and a Canadian one. We're not always known for this, but they've got groove. Like, for me, it's got groove, and it's so rare in a rock band.
Yeah,
I think that's their, you know, bar bluesy background.
Groove and swagger for frigging days.
Yep.
And every single one of them separately. Of course, Gord stands out. And if you saw them live and you felt that passion, but every single one of them had their own niche in the band that they've said it without one of the five, just as a different product. Not that it's not a good product, but the five of those guys and you heard it in the docuseries. You heard it when they talked about it at the book. It's like, we don't phone shit in.
No.
Like, sore throats, you know, we don't phone it in. It, like, they understood how important it was to get that out there. And how many times did they do a cross Canadian tour in a friggin' van, like, to not stab each other? like, that just, that's insane. Absolutely insane.
When you're
and
talking,
it was before phones and every, like, you had to have conversations with people in the car. You had no choice but to converse with each other.
And then whoever's driving has
very long.
Yeah, whoever's in charge is in charge of the, or what did they say? Someone was in charge of driving and someone was in charge of the music. So they would each have a different, like, playlist, and they would, I love that.
For sure. Well, and that's still true. Like, Gord Sinclair just did a video on Instagram. I think they shared it, and he was calling out Taylor Swift's ending her big ass tour that she's been on forever, was ending in Vancouver, and he was shouting her out and congratulating her on this massive tour that she did and, like, all this whatever. And whatever your opinion of Taylor Swift's music is, you can't deny this, the tour and all of the things about it. You just can't deny that. And so for them to even still do that, and then he was talking about going to see the local music, go and support your local musicians and everything. And so still, they're still doing that. And that's awesome. Calling out the little guys, go see the music and support the local venues. It's
important. And they're sitting in with bands too.
That's right.
Like, you're seeing
that with the Truths.
Yeah. Love that. Love that.
Yeah.
Really great stuff. Yeah. So Shall we, was there any other thoughts on the 169? Sorry, I've got it scrolling at the bottom.
Well, speaking of the truths there, I was going through the list last night and saw that putting down for music at work was 143. Like, putting down, that's a great song.
It's so fabulous.
I thought it was such a great song. I thought, didn't they release it as a single? And then I Googled it and I'm like, no, but the Trues have covered it at every concert. So it's such a great song and the Trues have made it part of their set list. And yet it's 143. I'm like, what? Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
We're just delivering the goods here.
Yeah, I know. This is a messenger. This is just the messenger.
That's right. But it's somebody had that song as their, you know, as their number one song or like,
for okay, quick question. 169, Super Farmer Nano Baby. That's a B-side.
Yeah, it comes from the Phantom Power reissue.
From the reissue. Okay, and it still had enough votes to get on at 169.
It probably had one vote, you know, like realistically.
One vote more than Coconut Cream.
There you go. Yeah,
there you look go. At
you. You are looking out for Coconut Cream.
I was going to say, can't we round this list out to 170? I'm like, we need to round it out to 170. So I'm on the petition.
Does it not boggle you? Does it not boggle you that the brilliance of Gord Downie can write songs like Nautical Disaster and all these wonder ones, but also I'm a Werewolf Baby and Coconut Cream? Like,
yeah.
and then Dean, the Discovering Downie podcast, like he's got a whole nother 8+, you know, albums that are as brilliant as the Tragically Hip stuff. It's like you just didn't get the attention, right? But friggin' masterful, masterful.
Hey, if you haven't listened to Discovering Downie, here's a plug here. Listen to it. Because I had, you know, like everybody else, I wasn't that familiar. And I was a little bit like, what's he doing? What's he doing going off on soul? Is he going to be all artsy fartsy now? Is he going to be so self-indulgent that I can't enjoy it? And it's not. Like, just listening to the podcast. There's some great, great music there.
Amazing. Yeah, they address it too in the docuseries and in the book discussion, just like how that was impactful on the band. So, good stuff.
Speaking of good stuff, we are winding down the list of 169 right now. You can see Vaccination Scar, the title track of our song, at 66. Tiger the Lion, something that I'm really into, 65. Inevitability of Death, 64. So it just keeps getting
beautiful
crazy.
Thing.
And it's going to get crazier as we move into the top 40. So let's do that right now and take a quick preview of what that top 40 might look like. Dean, you've seen 169 through 41, so you have a pretty good idea of where things, which songs are going to be in the top 40. You have a, you know, relative.
It's hard. This is a lot of songs to remember. There's 169 songs. No, I don't. It's a blur. I'm sorry. It's a blur of great music. We've agreed on Grace 2 is there.
Yeah,
that's right.
Words were important to Gord. You can not only garner that from the work from the hip, the solo work, but he also did poetry. He has books of poetry. So words were really important. Always carried around a notebook and always had his, you know, his four color pen. His brother Patrick brought one of those when they came to our event, and it was very touching. To see it. Oh, did you? Oh, nice, JD.
Patrick gave me that. Yeah.
I love it. I keep one in my folder as well. But the words are brilliant. And you know, the legacy, I guess, is that here we are, after the band hasn't played live in all these years, and we're still having this passionate discussion and rediscovering and I hope like heck that the boys are benefiting from all that. Honestly, like I'm being selfish. Like I really hope they're paying for their kids' college and then some.
Particularly because they're Canadian and it is just such a small market up here. And then, you know, it's just, it's a real working class musician's life. I feel, 'cause you just don't get those big signing bonuses and all that.
Well, your money comes from touring and merch.
Yeah.
I mean, anymore, unless you're getting the billion downloads, you're not getting much money from the streaming services or YouTubes or any of those.
Here's a question then. Have they ever licensed a song for a commercial? That's a huge payday.
Yes.
Canadian Tire? Yeah.
Head by Century, right?
And Scotiabank did a Head by Century as well.
Yeah.
And they were also in Anne of Green Gables, right?
Men with Brooms.
Yeah. So those are things that will bring
Unfortunately, they're all Canadian companies, so they are not big.
They're all Canadian companies, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's not...
It's not like the Black Keys where they, you know, we're going to use 30 seconds of this song and you're going to get $5 million.
Exactly. Yeah. You need something, you know, somebody here. But that kind of takes away from everything then.
It's going to be really interesting to see.
If some American company, like, I would be like, no, it wouldn't feel right. And so I'm okay with that. Like, it's okay.
Donald Trump wanted to use Fight. I do know that.
If Spirit used Silver Jack going forward, or Freak Turbulence. I think what's going to be interesting is we're recording this before it airs, obviously. Well, we're definitely not recording it after it airs. But I'm really curious because I think based on my download numbers and just based on conversational things, it's within our cohort, of course, but I feel like they're back in the zeitgeist. You know, maybe zeitgeist is too big a word, but you know, with the doc and with the book and with the 40th anniversary, I feel like they're on the tip of people's tongues a little bit more than they were even
when we were in Toronto at the event. They had the race going on where they had a car and they were all there. I mean, so they're doing promotional things as well, also, like, if you're following them, they're on a variety of different podcasts and interviews again. And they're also very active, you know, individually in their music, right? Paul's been touring recently. Johnny's got new stuff coming out. So, you know, you've got some new music that's available too. And what a perfect time while you've got that attention to say, yeah, please, we love that you're listening to The Hip. But check out Strippers Union or check out, you know, Paul's band and enjoy that. So that to me, I love that. And I agree with you, Sarah. And I was going to say, like, if I'm very passionate still about my angst that they didn't get, in my opinion, the credit and the attention they deserved in the United States. Right. And I've held that for decades. And it's anybody who will listen, like if anyone even remotely close knows, I'm just the fact, and this is wrong of me, but if they're from Canada, you like The Hip? And then and typically it's a yes, and you get into this beautiful conversation, but that's not happening with the normal conversations, right? Like other bands are, like we talk about Taylor Swift and we talk about, and they deserve it and that's all great. But I wanted to have those discussions with The Hip about The Hip. And now they're, you know, back on the tip of our tongues, which is great. Yeah. But now watching that docuseries and I will echo what you said, Sarah, like as much as I want them to do well, and I think they're doing well enough to be good and taking care of, you know, their bills and all that.
Yeah.
But to see everything that happened with the whole Tower Records and, you know, you just like, I saw that and my heart and body and soul sunk. I was dead for 5 minutes knowing that would have been the catalyst, in my opinion, to that. Well, I don't want to say maybe superstardom, but stardom enough in the United, where it could have been an Alanis, it could have been Shania Twain, it could have been Bryan Adams, it could have been a major Canadian rock band that got the Rush, you know, Bare Naked Ladies, just those that got that prominence down here. They were there, and they didn't because they had a reason, and the reason was we're not the hip unless we stay true to.
That's right. They didn't compromise.
And then I died when Sam the Record Man did what they did to them.
And then what they did.
Do not have any loyalties to anybody in this business, because even when you think your homegrown local record store is going to have your back, no, there's some schmuck in the publicity department looking for quick.
That's a tough thing to learn working in this business. I have my own stories of learning that lesson, unfortunately, working in the music business. So it's, it sucks. You're just like, oof, really? Okay.
Yep.
I see where we stand. Okay. But that's something that I really respect about them, you know, as a band, is that they have always stood for what they wanted and their morals and what felt right and what it meant to them. And I really respect that on a lot of levels.
Well, for me, I was just like the relentlessness of everybody asking, why aren't you big in the U.S.? I mean, we're talking 10 years. That was a national conversation, right, Jamie? When we were growing up, it was a it must have been so tiresome. It must have been just so how do you just keep moving forward and ultimately not get what everybody else thinks you need to get? You know, it just be so tough, and to just keep on making great music and doing what you need to do. We shouldn't have asked that of anybody, but that's how societies were, especially as Canadians.
You know, Kirk, we didn't have that issue here. So it's funny for me to hear that from other people, or even when I've, you know, introduced this band to my friends, people that have no idea because they live in the Midwest or they live in Florida or they live in Texas, or, you know, all of my community is just all over the States. And it's so funny to me because that's just not an issue here in Buffalo at all. Like, right. You know, there's bumper stickers everywhere. We had a whole discussion, like the town ballroom here, you know, iconic Buffalo venue. The marquee is literally a full band picture of the Tragically Hip from when they were there for two nights in 07. So we have this Buffalo theater here, and it's like outside. I mean, it's a big deal here. And so it's funny to me. It's like, we don't have that issue here at all.
See, our rock stars aren't the same. Like, you know, in the rock journalism, you could write about Ozzy biting the head off bats, or all these rock stars doing all these crazy things, whatever. And so the hip never did much. So what are you going to talk about? Why aren't they big in the U.S.? You got to have some kind of gossip or something. It just felt like, because it really wasn't all of us. I mean, we would be cheering, right? We'd be thinking, okay, maybe this will be it. Maybe this will be it. You want a little bit of validation next to the biggest cultural elephant in the room. But it was really the media really that just kept this conversation going and going and going.
Yeah. And it's funny because you look at the places they played in the U.S., like the 930 Club in Washington, D.C., and I forget where they played in New York, but they played Fillmore in San Francisco. Yeah. They're all venues that, like, touring bands play. Like,
well, somebody said that in the docuseries too. They had touched on that, where it was like, yeah, but if you look at the clubs that they were playing, like, they were the clubs that you wanted to fucking play.
Yeah, exactly.
The places that bands wanted to go and play music. So what are you talking about?
Right. Like,
if we're going to go to the States and play, then we're going to go to the States and play.
Yeah.
The cool spots. Like,
but, you know, here we are, and they didn't. They didn't.
It's okay.
But they had their, you know, they had their brushes. They opened for The Who. They opened for The Stones. I mean, they opened for some of the biggest acts that are out there. The thing that I was going to say, you know, they just cared so much about the music and their fans. Like, I think that's almost another reason why they didn't get that widespread is like Dean said, like, they didn't have that controversial thing. Like, they're you and I. And
we didn't even know they didn't get along until this documentary.
Right, right, right. But they also had respect enough for the music and for the fans to not make it about them and any of their internal squabbles, where so many bands go, oh, that's our key. Right? This guy hates this guy, but we still play together. And so let's just live off the tension. And, you know, maybe that makes the music better or not, but the hip were always the hip, and they'll always be the hip. And I agree with Sarah, and I agree with Dean. Like, yeah, maybe if they had something that was controversial, but then they wouldn't be the hip anymore. And we wouldn't be talking like we're talking with the reverence that we have.
We're probably to blame ourselves for them not making it big, because the one time I saw them in when I was in film school in Orlando, they played the Sapphire Supper Club, 200 people. I'm ecstatic. I get tickets. I go, it's all Canadians.
Yeah.
Small club, big flags, all this. And it's like,
yep.
We maybe should open the door and make some space for Americans to get in and see the band. Like, because, you know, and I was really shocked. I thought, oh, there's only 200 of us here. Maybe the band will come out and greet us Canadians. No, they weren't really interested. They just kind of wanted to do their gig. They did a great show. But then there was nothing to be won or lost by not coming out to see us.
Mm.
And they did. And I just thought, I was like, oh, yeah, maybe we were taking up some space here.
Picking up on some of what you said, I think they did leave us with a beautiful legacy and a beautiful catalog. And this project is really going to celebrate that. For the 40th anniversary of the Tragically Hip, we're going to count down 40 of their classic songs, and we're going to really get caught up in that and enjoy that. But I really think the hook of the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown is that I get to sit with somebody and learn about their experiences and what they've felt when they've listened to the music. And that is really, to me, that's just absolutely great. So that all starts on January 6th. That's the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown. And we're really looking forward to that. I want to thank you guys so much for joining me today. But before we bid adieu, I'm curious if you have any plugs. Dean, do you have anything you would like to plug?
Yeah, you can check out our Rainy Media TV YouTube channel. We put a whole bunch of content up there of web series and TV shows that we produce. And also you can see our Tragically Hip tour of Kingston, when I went with the Discovering Downey guys to Kingston and we checked out a whole bunch of hip hotspots. That video's up there. Help me get it over 1,000. Is that 968 or something?
Kirk, how about you?
Yeah, I'll piggyback off of that. You know, please, if you have not listened to any of the Discovering Downey, you know, we ask that you do. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at some of the insights, but specifically and more importantly, listen to yourself some Gord Downie solo albums. I don't care, pick one, any one of them, you'll get pulled in. So definitely check out the Discovering Downie. I do a couple other podcasts. I'm really involved in my local theater down here, my family and I, and so we started a podcast called Steps to the Stage that's got a pretty good following for a community theater podcast, so check that out. I'm just started a new project called Soul Sisteries, which is a mental wellness podcast, and two amazing hosts, two sisters, thus the Soul Sisteries. We're about 3 or 4 episodes in. We've just dropped today, which obviously when this released will be long ago, but special guest today. So that's on the podcast side. And then Kirk Lane Music for my solo acoustic stuff, and playing a little rock band called The Darryls. My name's Larry. This is my brother Daryl, my other brother Daryl. So if you get it, you get it. If not, thank you.
And if not, fuck you.
Yeah.
You're too young. There, Jay, you have some stuff that you want to plug, and you also have some news that you want to share about our relationship and where Dufra podcast and such and DATC
media. Relationship, do what's going on?
We have all sorts of things, but you can find everything at DATCmediaCompany.com. All the podcasts, the Patreon, the YouTube channel, all the things, just DATCmediaCompany.com. JD and I are working on a lot of very, very cool things. I don't know if we're totally ready for a full announcement, but
no, we've got to keep them waiting.
we don't want to give away too much, but we have some stuff coming right in the beginning of 2025 when this starts airing in the beginning of January, and moving forward with some other really cool projects I'm excited about. So yes, we are scheming a lot of very fun things, and I'm excited and really looking forward to taping my sit down for my guest appearance on the Top 40 Countdown this coming Saturday. So that's going to be fun as well. So yes, everything at datcmediacompany.com.
Excellent. Well, the next time we get together to do a roundtable, there'll be three different panelists joining me. And if you would like to be one of those panelists, please send me an email at tthtop40@gmail.com, or we're available on any of our socials at tthtop40. And that's what I have got for you this evening as we talk about the list of 169, and we also contribute to the hype surrounding the Top 40 Countdown. I hope you're ready for it. It begins January 6th, and we're going to have a lot of fun with it. It's going to be a great deal of fun. So stick around and enjoy that. Make sure to subscribe, rate, review the podcast, share, and support us, and we'll go from there. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Pick up your shit. Thanks for listening to the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown. To email us, send an email to tthtop40@gmail.com. We're social. Find us on all the socials at tthtop40.
Tuvra! Podcasts and such.
Zaxby's just out Philly the Philly again. The Zaxby's Chicken Philly is back with garlic aioli, sauteed peppers and onions, decadent melty cheese, and your choice of Zaxby's signature crispy chicken fingers or delicious grilled chicken. But it's only back for a limited time, so enjoy it while you can. No pressure. It's just the greatest sandwich of all time on a ticking clock. Order the Chicken Philly today. Who's got the sauce? Zaxby's.